I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, amazing. So to kick off this interview, I wanted to know who you are, what your background is. Can you tell me what you do right now and your background?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Germany. Originally, I used to play on the German golf national team. So I used to be a golf player.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a long time ago though. And then I didn't pursue a professional career, went to college instead, studied computer science and finance, moved to the U.S.
How did you go from playing golf to, you know, switching your interests completely to the
Golf is an interesting sport. I'm glad you're asking. So golf, there's a few things that I love about it. It's like really tough, very difficult sport, very, very demanding from a technique perspective. And once you get to a high level, it's all in your head. Like, you're just playing against yourself all the time. That's fun if you play well. It's not very fun if you don't play very well. So I'm really tall. I'm 6'4", which helps a lot because I hit the ball very far. But I'm also very far away from the ground, so my short game isn't that strong. And I don't think I would have ever been good enough to play, like, top golf. And so I'd rather play not play professionally than be like somewhere in the bottom half or wherever. And so I studied computer science and finance because I really enjoyed that.
Is there like a similarity in terms of, I don't know, like you mentioned something about, you know, golf being more like a lonely sport, right? Like, you play by yourself.
It can be lonely.
Is there any sort of like psychological similarity to study engineering and
then to study? Yeah, no, it's actually a good question. I think studying is one thing. I'm not sure whether you can compare it, but what definitely is true is playing golf and entrepreneurship have a lot of things in common.
Really?
Yeah, because if you're CEO of your own company, that's very lonely. You have all these problems you need to solve. They're all hard. Most of them you've never had before, and there's all these unique situations. And so I found a lot of parallels there. It also helps a lot. Golf is a sport where if you're nervous or if you're excited, it impacts the way you play. And so you really need to calm yourself down a lot. And I think the same is true for entrepreneurship. If you start a company, you need to be really relaxed and then you always be calm. Otherwise the team notices. And then if you're nervous, the team becomes nervous and then you have a huge mess.
Well, that's very interesting. So can you tell me what happened next? So you studied.
Yeah. So I studied computer science and finance. I always wanted to start engineering, when I finished playing golf, I realized that real engineering, like the future of engineering, at least in my interest, was software rather than hardware. And so I studied computer science, and then I moved to the US in 2011 to pursue an MBA in Stanford. And so I was at Stanford from 2011, 2013.
The main reason, more about later.
I hope we'll go into that. The main reason I moved to the US to do an MBA is because I wanted to go in tech. I thought the best way to enter Silicon Valley is through joining Stanford or a program that like has a lot of exposure to technology and these companies. And so when I was hoping that was the case when I moved to the US. And then what I found is like everything is around Silicon Valley and technology. And so my professors and lecturers had started companies before, and they were the first ones to invest in our company also. And so it was a really good idea, and it worked out very well for me, luckily.
So you were kind of also able to network.
Network is a funny word because it assumes you're really opportunistic and you do it because like you go to Stanford only so you meet people that you can use in your career. It actually doesn't feel like that. All these classmates become very, very good friends of yours. So you spend 2 years of your life with them. It's a really funny 2 years of your life because you're not working. You don't have, you just got used to having responsibility, and then the responsibility is gone. And then you just study for 2 years and travel. And so it's really fun, very fun 2 years. I think you learn a lot. You learn a lot about yourself, and you get to meet like really interesting people. And so when I said you meet really interesting people, I got lucky and ended up meeting my future co-founder of my company. Chris is he's American from the East Coast. He was MIT undergrad. And he's obsessed with cars. He loves cars. His first car was a DeLorean. That's the car from Back to the Future. You know that movie?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's all about cars. And when we got together, business school, became friends, traveled, and he taught me there's so much he could do in the car space. And then we ended up basically starting a car company. All our classmates asked him for advice how to sell a car. And then we helped our classmates sell their cars, which was really fun.
That's super amazing. So, did you guys already have that ambition to start a company while you guys were still student and just being friends?
Yeah, interestingly, I did. Like, I came to the US very, very purposefully with the intent to start a company. Chris, my co-founder, he was different. He wanted to work for a big car company. His dream job was working for Ferrari or McLaren, one of the Formula One companies.
That's
And
amazing.
so instead of doing that, he actually looked at one of these companies between first and second year, and then realized it's a very cool product. Like, the car is amazing. But working for these car companies wasn't as fun. And then I kind of convinced him to start a company with me, and it ended up very, very, I hope he would admit it ended up being a good idea.
That being the very first company, how did you know you were choosing the right co-founder?
Oh, good
What are you
question.
looking for?
Yeah, like, I think we stumbled into it and we got lucky. I think this is like a relationship. You actually never know how it will turn out. You just need to make the move if it feels right. And so what we didn't know at the time but found out later is that we're very complementary. He's a thinker. He's incredibly smart and really strategic and very creative. And so he really enjoys that part. And then he has 1,000 ideas, and then he usually stumbles. And I'm the opposite. I have a hard time coming up with really creative things to do and ways to solve problems. But once he give me direction and I agree with the direction, I run very fast with a lot of urgency and get a lot of stuff done. And so,
Amazing.
yeah, he had all these ideas, and I'm like, I think these are all not good ideas, but let's try that one, for example. And so we explored that, and just happened to be a really good fit, the two of us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So that actually leads me to my next question, which is you seem to be very passionate about technology, and this has been consistent passion of yours, right? Why technology though? Like our show, one of the things I talk about is the possibility with humanity. So
Yep.
in terms of technology, like how do you see technology playing the role
Yeah. I think the big difference between what I wanted to do and what I'm passionate about when I was a kid and today is, like, back then, Germany is famous for German engineering, and that's mainly hardware, like robotics and stuff, like really, really interesting stuff. Germany is a little less famous for software, like technology that scales better, where you don't have to have metal and robots. And so I got really excited about the software part, because I feel like with software you can solve a lot of problems, be it in, like, you think of the space and there's software that disrupted the space in some way or the other. I'm not like a rocket scientist. Like, I don't get very, very deep in technology and develop technologies that develop better technologies, but I like using technology to solve problems. And so when we started our first company, it ended up being, think of Amazon for used cars. So we were selling used cars online. And it was more of a technology-enabled company than a technology company. And so the new company we're starting right now is a fintech company. So it's a financial company, financial services company that's powered through technology. And it's, again, it's not rocket science. Like, we're not reinventing something completely new, but we're using technologies that are available to solve problems today that weren't available a couple of years ago, if that makes sense.
So I heard this before where someone describes what innovation is to take the existing idea and then mix them together with something else and then come up
Yeah,
with a newer.
I would
So
think so.
you guys are very, you know, innovative. So
We're
sorry,
trying
I
to be.
think I think I actually interrupted you there from my first question actually. I think I didn't let you finish your full story of
Oh
what
yeah, I got lost halfway.
you
Yeah, so
were
what did
doing.
we do? We
Sorry, I
started
got
this.
too interested.
No worries. I'm glad you asked. So we started this company called Carlypso. sold our classmates' cars, raised $1.2 million from professors. Experiment a little bit, went through Y Combinator. Y Combinator is the most well-known startup accelerator in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a really good experience. Graduated, raised a little bit more money, changed the model. Our model wasn't scaling as fast as we wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was very labor intensive. And so we moved away from helping private people to sell their cars to the private people. But we really introduced this Amazon model where we sell cars completely online.
Mm-hmm.
And so that started growing really fast, so fast that we raised, I think at the time, then $10 million and then started building a company. And then we ran that company for another 2 years. That was 4 years in total at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end of the 4 years, we asked ourselves, should we raise another round of funding to grow even bigger?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there anything else that we discovered on the way that maybe more valuable than selling cars? And so when we started comparing notes with friends and quote unquote competitors, we realized that we had built really interesting software to power our car sales. And so our competitor at the time, they were bigger than us, and they had tried to build technology that that was very similar to what we had built, but hadn't started yet. And so then we said, hey, this is, why do we compete against the other? Let's just combine the two companies. Like, we sell our company to them, bring on the whole team, and then work on it together, which is what we ended up doing. And so we sold our company to Carvana. And so that was, when was that? That was in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, as part of the deal, we stayed on, which was exciting because we wanted to see it through. Like, we weren't done yet. We thought there's still a lot of work to do.
Right.
So we joined, the whole team joined. Chris was responsible for, my co-founder, for like product and the website.
Mm-hmm.
I became more of a general manager for a new business unit. And so we stayed on for 3 years, which was a really, really fun journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, and then just to finish up the whole story, we left in June of this year. So a couple of months ago, we started a new business.
Mm-hmm.
It's, as I said earlier, it's a financial services company powered by technology.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole premise is around refinancing auto loans. In the US, different than in any other country, people who've proven to not make payments regularly, so have challenged credit, they can get cars in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start making their payments, they improve their credit worthiness. So they should get lower rates, but the rates are stuck somehow at the point in time when they bought the car. And so there's a huge opportunity.
Right. So how did you come up with this idea?
Yeah, good question. So there, when we were selling cars ourselves with our own company,
mm-hmm.
we noticed that customers asked us, think of us as a car dealer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They asked us for loans and insurance products.
Yeah.
But we didn't think that made any sense because we're a car dealership. We're not like insurance brokers or banks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to partner with other institutions. And then we found that different partners worked slightly differently. Some paid us a really high referral fee.
Mm-hmm.
And others were very customer centric, wanted to give really good rates and conditions to customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we realized this is not aligned because the customer wants the best rate, interest rate,
mm-hmm.
but most dealers want to make a lot of money. And so we realized at the time that if you're a car dealership, you optimize for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to help the consumer, you need to address him after he bought a car, ideally like 12 to 18 months later, when he made some payments, and then you can give him a much better loan and save him thousands of dollars. So the insight came from when we ran our last company, that's more than 3 years ago.
I see, very interesting. So actually this kind of points to the question I was gonna ask at the very end, but you know, in terms of like pursuing business opportunity, like where is your passion? Like is it the fact that you like the game of entrepreneurship? Do you see yourself liking the game as an entrepreneurship, or do you see yourself liking the idea of like helping the car industry? Like, where does it come from?
Yeah, I think motivations and passions change. Like, you always want to do the right thing for the right reasons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that changes a little bit. When I graduated from business school, and that's true for myself, for all my peers, for everyone, like, we're really ambitious. We want to build big things, be very successful. And so back then, the horizon over which we wanted to be successful felt a little too short compared to how long it usually takes to build companies. So back then, I really liked the problem we were working on, but I also really wanted to build a big company. And so we sold it and then spent time with Carvana, and that worked out very well for us financially. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm presented with the same question, like, what am I excited about? Mm-hmm. This time, I not only like the problem, I also like the reason why we're doing it. That the goal is to give money back to people who don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Like people who are already disadvantaged by the system. We want to give them money back so they can build credit and then have like have a chance at have living a life with lots of prosperity. Mm-hmm. So for me, this time the motivation is not only the problem, but even like individual people who we can help. And so that's really important because like startups are hard. And then at some point you risk that you had like multiple weeks of bad experiences and frustration. Mm-hmm. You risk asking yourself, why am I doing this?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't have an alter mission or a grander mission and vision and motive, then it becomes a little hard to motivate yourself sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But do you think that it came out of your necessity, or do you think that was an intention that was already there?
Good question. Yeah. So I always liked competing. Like I really enjoyed it. I wanted to push myself and be really, really good. And I also didn't like competing with people who in golf, for example, who are worse than me. I always enjoyed playing against people who are much better than me. I thought that brought the best out of me. I think entrepreneurship is a little bit like that too. Mm-hmm. You always compare yourself with these big companies, incumbents that are much bigger, much better funded and have like really strong footholds.
Right.
And it's fun to be like the little guy to weasel yourself through the cracks and try to build something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, where the ambition motivation comes from. This time around, it's the same. And I feel like I'm even better prepared. So back then, like the competitors were a little bit too big and it was a really, really, really hard fight. Right. I think this time we have a very unfair advantage because we've been in the space for 7 years, understand it really well. I've learned a lot. And so now, other than winning, we can even win like as a big community and like include more people than just us founders, if that makes sense.
Was it easier experience for you to start the second company compared to the very first one?
Yeah, well, it's different, right? It's different for many reasons, including A, you've already made a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't make those mistakes again. You'll make different mistakes, but at least you already know some that you try to avoid.
Yeah.
Number two, mm-hmm. We got lucky because A, the first one worked out well.
Right.
So we just approached the same investors and had a lot of interest. But even luckier is that Chris and I get along very well. So my mm-hmm. co-founder and I get along really well. And like many times co-founders fight. It's just like in a relationship, these don't last forever.
Right.
We got lucky that we don't have a lot of ego issues. Like we agree to disagree a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then we trust data.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that and if you get along well, then a big risk of a startup that the founders could fight or not get along is actually taken off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so from an investor perspective, you have people who have done it before, you have people who have had a good financial outcome. So now they're fearless.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a group of people who already work together, have a lot of experience in a space that they know really well. That makes it significantly easier in terms of getting started and raising money. So that's mm-hmm. for sure. Building the business is still very hard.
Right. No, for sure. So when you're raising your fund, right, like you said that you knew some people already.
Yep.
What are they trusting on you? Like, is it you?
Why? I ask myself the same question all the time. Like, why would you trust me?
I'm just curious, like, what are they investing on? As an investor?
It depends on the stage. So right now, we went out, talked to investors, fundraising, and they invested in two people and a story and our experience. They invested in there's Chris and I, we could choose to do a lot of things for the next 10 years of our lives
because
mm-hmm. we got lucky, but we're choosing this. So that already arguably suggests that we really believe in it. Like, it's not like we're trying to desperately start a company. No, we really believe in it. And then we happen to, this is good or bad, to have become experts in the car space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just know the space really well. It's frustrating because it's a frustrating space, but it also means we learned a lot. And so that gives us an advantage.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you mentioned something very interesting earlier. You said that you were very competitive, right? Which is very important trait, I think, for you to have if you're a business leader. I think that there's a mixed concept with being competitive and being insecure, right? Like it kind of goes.
That you think I'm insecure?
No, not at all. But I mean, in general,
I'm just kidding.
And then, as you mentioned, there are gonna be times where it's very hard to persevere, and those are the times where you definitely need high sense of self-esteem and high willingness to love yourself, even if you fail. Yeah. So, given all these like three concepts, being a little bit insecure that you wanna prove someone else that you're capable, you're competitive. At the same time, you have this high sense of self-esteem. Like, can you kind of like explain how this thing play in your particular case?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. So when you say competitive, I think it manifests itself in two different ways. Mm-hmm. Like in my case, I don't like competing unless I feel like I have a really, really good chance at winning. Mm-hmm. Like in golf, for example, I loved competing because on the level I played, I was very good. Mm-hmm. But then at the very end, I just realized I was just honest to myself. Like, it's like we're all playing with the same golf clubs, same tools, but some of them are just so much better than me that that's not the battle I wanted to choose. Mm-hmm. Instead, I studied computer science and finance, went to college, and so I felt like a battle I would win is more intellectual than an athletic battle, if that makes sense. And so when we started our first company, like everything we've always looked for was, where do we have an edge? Like, where do we have an unfair advantage because we know something, or we have access to something, or we've built something, or we like have specific resources. And so when I compete, I don't want to compete in something that's a commodity. Like, I'm looking to compete on a level where I have a unique advantage. Mm-hmm. So in the new business, for example, we just happen to know the space so well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's slightly different than just competing for the sake of competing. So that's around like a few thoughts around competing in general. And then competition, I think I'm just motivated. I just like having fun and being good at something. Like, I don't mind losing at all. Like in golf, I was very upset when I lost because I messed up. I was not very upset that a few times I lost and the other person was just better than me. And so in startups, you just need to know that some days are just really bad. Like, you wake up and it starts bad and then it gets even worse. The most important thing is to like get a lot of sleep, to work out, and to manage your own psychology. You need to understand whether it's just you that feels down, or whether all the signs point to like, this is not working. Mm-hmm. And so that's no problem. You just need to be intellectually honest. You need to try hard enough. Mm-hmm. To not have a wrong signal, but if at some point you realize this is not working, you just pivot to something else.
Right. So I guess I have two different questions following up to that. Like, the first one is, when do you know if something is not working anymore versus like you need to persevere? And the second thing is, how can you gain the courage to not blame yourself when you make mistakes, like in a time like that?
Yeah. So your first question was, how do you know when it doesn't work? It's actually, the question is actually the other way around. That's even harder. When do you know that it works? Mm-hmm. And so like there's this concept called product market fit, what startups are looking for. You want to get up to a place where, okay, everybody wants what I have. Now I can grow this really big. And so there's no, like, it's not black and white whether you have product market fit or whether you don't. In our previous company, like the model that we pursued in the end was going really well. Like from zero to 150 cars a month. 150 cars a month means $3 million in revenue. So that's quite a lot per month. Like, that worked really well. And we had every reason to believe the company could be very, very big.
Right.
And then the next sale became harder and harder. And we were really confused because it went like that and then became flat.
Mm-hmm.
And so with hindsight, it took us a long time to understand what happened. Like, we had these early adopters, like we found people who understood what we were doing and wondered what we have. And these were a little less than 150 a month. Mm-hmm. And then when we went beyond that, we entered a segment of the market that was just not as willing to take the risk, or what felt like a risk, or to try this out. And so that's why the question is, did we have something that worked? Like, did we have product market fit? And you can argue we did. You can also argue we didn't. I think we had it for a specific segment. And so that's why we had a really good feeling and we got very, very positive feedback. But then we noticed like it was getting harder and not easier to scale the business. And then we realized, okay, I don't think we have it for that segment. And then, yeah, there's no data that suggested in, other than in our case, like the customer acquisition cost went up and not down every time we tried to make another sale. So that wasn't a good sign. But in reality, we didn't need the data to tell us. Like, we felt it wasn't quite working. Like, it wasn't like everybody wanted what we had. And so I think that's how we felt it. And then the second question is, how do you have the courage to go on?
Well, you not blame yourself when you know that you kind of messed it up.
Well, Phil Knight, the guy who started Nike, he went to Stanford Business School too. And he has this one saying that I love. He says, it doesn't matter how often you fail, for as long as you don't fail the last time you try. So he says the failure is just part of the journey, and you get used to it. Like, it's in the beginning, you may be discouraged if something that you believed in didn't work, but like, that's just startups. Every day today, I tried 3 things that didn't work and I thought it was fun. You're like, oh, I thought this could work. And then you just get used to like getting punched in the face. It's just part of the journey. And
do you think you're more tolerant into that because you've been through a lot now?
I've been through a lot. Like, luckily, I haven't, like, physically, I have not been through a lot. Mentally, maybe. It depends. It depends on what you enjoy. Like, Chris, my co-founder, loves the super early stage of the company. I'm starting to get much better at handling it because it's the part where you need to be really creative. If it wasn't for him, I think I couldn't do it because I need somebody to be really creative. Also, I think vice versa, if you ask him, it's like, yeah, I have all these ideas, but I don't know how to get going. Like, I don't get anything done quickly. So that's why we work well together. And yeah, like, for as long as you're not trapped into doing something that doesn't work and you don't know a way out, this is all fun. Like, you just need to be honest to yourself. You need to try as hard as possible. You need to be maintain your integrity. And then if you quote unquote survive long enough as a company, if you don't run out of money, you'll find something that works. You just need to be really frugal.
I see. That's very insightful. So I'm going to actually come back to one of your early experience at the White Combinator. Can you tell me about the experience you had there at the White Combinator?
Yeah. So for a little context, Y Combinator or YC is a startup incubator or accelerator program. I think they have 2 classes a year. They accept 100 startups. And so the goal there is, it's also jokingly, it's been called the summer, Course 6 summer camp. Course 6 is the software engineering or computer science class in MIT. And so what the initial engineers, initial founders that joined the program were all like these incredibly hyper smart people from MIT who started building products, but who had like one little weakness or lack of experience. They never left the building. They always tried, they can reinvent the wheel from behind the computer screen. And Y Combinator is like, no, you have to go out of the building and talk to your customers because they'll tell you whether or not or you can watch them use your product and then you learn. And so that's uncomfortable sometimes. But the program, like, they keep you accountable. Every week you have office hours and you check in and there's other teams that keep you responsible and accountable. And so I really enjoyed that part, meeting other entrepreneurs who were like in the fight, in a different fight, but we're fighting the same direction at least. And then towards the end of the experience, you have what's called Demo Day. That's when all the startup pitch and create this environment where a lot of investors want to invest and it's really hard to tell which company works and which one doesn't. So everybody gets money. I think that's a good experience. We were lucky that we had raised a lot of money already before entering YC. And we came from a really strong network from Stanford. But people who don't have that network and want to raise money for their company, I think going through that program is really, 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 really valuable.
How do they get in if they're not in the same position as you are?
If they're not in the same what?
Position as you are.
Position?
Like, because you already had like good proof of success like before?
Oh yeah, no, actually, I think in some way I felt like we were actually already beyond like the very early startup stage with our business. Mm-hmm. We had a reset because we changed the model, and so that made us a good fit. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to have revenue. You don't need to have like an operating product. What you need to have in order to get into YC is a strong conviction, and you must have talked to customers, and the customers must have either disagreed with you and told you what else to build, or you learned a lot from talking to customers, so much so that you have the courage to build a business. And so there's a lot of companies at YC that are very early stage, and that's good. What all of them have in common is like they have the courage to talk to customers, they have convictions and don't mind to be proven wrong, mm-hmm. and they're just willing to learn really quickly. And that's like you apply, and then I think there's a video, and then during COVID times, I don't know how they do it. I think they do it remotely, but we met at YC at the building every other week, I think, or every week, and that lasted for 3 months.
I see. Like, what was the one thing, if you could pick and choose, like, what was the one thing you would say you took away the most from that experience?
From Y Combinator? Mm. Well, the part that I enjoyed most is there's these dinners, always organized dinners, I think every other week, and then all these tech celebrities come and tell their story, and so that's super inspiring.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a day where nothing works, and then you sit down, and then Mark Zuckerberg tells you how you built Facebook, you're like, let's try again tomorrow. But the one thing that really lasts are the friendships we made, because mm-hmm. like being a founder is lonely, and a lot of my friends are founders, my closest friends aren't, and so sometimes I couldn't quite empathize with why I worked so much and why I cared so much, and then finding like a big community of people who think very much like that, I mm-hmm. thought was really valuable and helped the company.
Right. So do you believe like mentorship is something that works for entrepreneurs?
I think it's super important. There's mm-hmm. three types of decisions you need to make in a startup.
Okay.
There's a decision where you can collect data. You're like, I don't know whether I should build X or like A or B, mm-hmm. but I can build a prototype and test, and then data will tell me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one decision you make where data tells you what to do. There's another decision where only you as a founder can know what's the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly very much aligned with where you want the journey to go, mm-hmm. and your North Star and your values.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the company and culture you're building. And the third decisions are things that there's no data, mm-hmm. and you don't know how to make the decision, but other founders have had the same problem 100 times before.
Mm-hmm.
And so for things that's new to me but have happened to every other founder, mentors are really great, because they tell you, I know exactly that you don't know which direction to go, but I'll tell you go that way. I've seen this 10 times. And so that's where I find mentors really helpful.
Mm, makes sense. So I'm going to go into, I have two more questions.
Tell me. The next one is,
so you said that you graduated from Stanford MBA, right? Like, can you also tell me the experience there? And also, how was it actually helpful for your career?
Oh, yeah, very good question. So the Stanford MBA, I can only speak to the Stanford MBA. I think every program is slightly different. I went in with a lot of expectations, and I left with like I was in awe of all the things that I experienced and many, many more things.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't even imagine going in how life-changing of an experience that will be. Not because of the academics. So the classes are good. Some classes are really, really great. Mm-hmm. For me, the classes around entrepreneurship I thought were great. But particularly for two reasons, I thought it was an incredible experience. A, all the friends I made, like really good friends, my best friends. And then the relationships I built to professors and lecturers. These are all people who were in our shoes 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I know spending their time with students trying to like give back.
Mm-hmm.
And so the help I've received from really incredible people is just incredible. And so now we're a case study. And so every year, once or twice, Chris, my co-founder, I go back to class and give a little bit back. Like, we're nothing compared to the people who helped us, but
mm-hmm.
like having the chance to give back and contribute a little bit feels really good. And so I really enjoy that.
So that sense of community, once again.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, mm-hmm. these are all friends.
I see. So I guess.
Oh yeah, the second question, did it help me? Did it help me on my startup? Okay. In a lot of ways, yes. So you, startups can't be taught. Like, you can't, like, accounting can be taught, finance can be taught, startups can be taught, because it's like everyone, no, I don't think so. What can be, because every business is different. What can be taught is the process. Like, how do you go about building a business and finding product market fit? That's what all you care about in a company. Everything else beyond that is hard, but I think the hardest part of a business is finding product market fit. Mm-hmm. And so there's a process that will help you and increase the chances to get there, but there's no right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And so what I felt the class has taught me very successfully is, like, you need to have a strong conviction around, I want this world to be different, and you need to have a North Star. Mm-hmm. And then day to day, you need to be really scrappy, very frugal, try out a lot of things, always talk to customers, because they'll tell you what to build. And so I feel like that process took me a long time to A, understand, and then become good at. But I feel like now, looking back, like, I would have never learned it and never understood it if it wasn't for the classes I had at Stanford. Mm-hmm. Number one. And number two is, like, all our funding from our first company came from professors and lecturers associated to Stanford. So we would have never been able to start the company if it wasn't for them.
Right. I see. So I'm going to move on to my very last question that just makes me sad, because you have been, like, incredible guests. Okay, so what I want to ask is, I think we kind of discovered this throughout our conversation, but what would you say, how do you describe what it takes for someone to become a good, successful entrepreneur and, you know, advisors in this investor in tech area?
I have a number of thoughts. Number one, in order, like, nobody will tell you whether or not you'll be successful. Even you might not know. Even you might think you'll be successful and you won't, or you may doubt yourself and you will. The most important thing as a founder and to start a company is to just get started. Like, you have to do something. If you just think about an idea and find all the reasons why it could or it could not work, you will always talk yourself out of trying. Because there's all these answers that you don't have. And then you're like, oh, there's a gazillion things I need to figure out.
Right.
This can't work. And so it's very easy to talk yourself out of starting something. And I think that's actually the biggest danger. So the most important thing is to just get started. Mm. And then you have to do it for the right reasons. Like, if money is your main motivation, you'll just not last enough. You won't be tenacious enough to go through really hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And so the real reason why you're in it needs to be something like a North Star, something really ambitious that you're going to achieve that's good for people and not just good for your wallet.
Right.
And so if you have that, then I think everybody is well suited to start a business and everybody should try.
Mm. But what's the balance though? Because as a business, you still need to think about money today, money tomorrow, and then
as a business you do, but personally you don't. Like, founders can, like, luckily that's changed a lot, but founders pay themselves enough to live a decent life, although San Francisco is really expensive. Like, investors want you to pay yourself well, so good enough so you can have a good life and you're not worried. Like, we paid ourselves very little and that wasn't a great idea. You need to be able to wake up on a Sunday and get a massage if you want one, or I don't know, if you want to go somewhere and take an Uber for a long ride, you should not think twice, otherwise you'll just live miserably, quote unquote. Mm. And then the week starts and that's what's really miserable, the startup life. And so you actually need the balance, and and so you should always pay yourself good enough to have an okay life and you have room and space to decompress.
Mm. Yeah,
and then
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to, otherwise, and investors will be very supportive.
Mm.
And then when you run the company, you need to do it very, very frugal. You can't spend a lot of money. You need to learn. It's all about learning quickly, as much as you can, as quickly as you can.
Mm.
And so you don't need to spend a lot of money to do it, but it needs to be part of your DNA, and it needs to become a habit to spend as little as possible to learn something, because you have to learn like 1,001 times.
Mm-hmm.
And if you budget too much for each of the learnings, it just won't last. Like, you need to be really scrappy and hacky. But I think everybody can do it. Like, especially if you've been in a startup for a long time and you've been struggling to make something work, you learn to be very scrappy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just survive long enough, if the company survives long enough, I think you'll find something that works.
Mm, makes sense. That's very insightful. So before I let you go, Okay. I want to ask you where people can find you.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I think the best way is just like you did, find me on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Look for Nicholas Hendricks. Maybe you can just put my LinkedIn profile in your show notes. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, people don't hesitate to reach out. It'd be fun to connect with people all over the world. And if you have questions or if you have answers or if you have feedback, like I'd love to hear. And then we didn't talk about it too much detail, but the new company is called Clutch.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit before we go. Yeah?
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so the company is called Clutch. Yep. The domain or the way you find it is withclutch.com. It's a digital platform to refinance your auto loan, which means you can save thousands of dollars. It's primarily for the US market. It's a technology company. It's a fintech business. We just started. We left our previous company we left it in June. Before the end of June, we had secured investment. So that happened so quickly, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. And we're about to close the round and then get started. And so the goal here is to save Americans a lot of money on their car expenses.
Amazing. So yeah, I'm going to make sure to distill that on my show notes.
Okay, and I'll help you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming to my show today.
Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out.